Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Play Me False by E.R. White. Narrated by Kurt Bonham and Megan Kelly.
Prologue. Him.
The television hummed across the dim parlor, its bluish light the only illumination in the fading dusk. A cheerful news anchor chattered to her co-anchor about a nearby college. A young woman had gone missing from its campus, apparently. The second in just a matter of months.
Such a terrible thing.
A little smile curled his lips. Lucy Falls was the devil's town. He hated it here. Had ever since he'd been a kid and realized he wasn't ever likely to leave. Not even with a college degree or money in the bank. Not with his mother sitting in this house like a monkey on his back, making sure he did everything she asked him to. She was sick, although not terminally so, and it was up to him to be a good son and take care of her. God knows his brother was useless. As if summoned by his thoughts, her weedy voice broke into his musings.
Is Wheel of Fortune on yet? I want to watch that Pat Sajak.
I'm watching the news, Mother.
She smacked her gums, going quiet. The newscast had switched to a field reporter, who held a microphone shoved in the face of a man on the college campus.
Here with me is Detective Jack Brady of the Charlottesville Police Department. Detective Brady, what can you tell us about the investigation?
The man looked irritated.
Only that there is an investigation, obviously. The last place the young woman was seen was here on campus, and we're doing everything we can to ascertain if that's accurate and what took place from that point. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Wait. Does this have anything to do with the previous disappearance of a...
She glances down at a crumpled piece of paper in her hand.
Miss Gemma Hayden? 2 months ago?
He shakes his head.
I have no comment at this time.
I have a comment.
Mother points querulously at the TV.
Wheel of Fortune is going to be over before you turn the channel.
I have so many comments. I turn the channel. My mood suddenly vastly improved. But I guess I'll keep them to myself for now.
1. Harriet. Life can change in an instant. I learned this lesson in the most crippling of ways, one late November evening, to the accompaniment of piped-in Christmas music and the high refrain of childish voices echoing in a Richmond mall. It's not my scene, the mall thing. I can feel the crowd and the noise polluting every pore, and I twist the silver medic alert bracelet around my wrist. God willing, the lights and noise won't trigger one of my seizures. I have a splitting headache, though, and that's never good. At my side, Sugar, my golden lab, whines low in her throat and presses closer to my thigh. She doesn't like them all either, even if she does love people. I scratch behind her ears, and she sits, panting softly. Good girl, Sugar, I croon. I'm here with my brother and his little girl, my sweet niece, Ava. I straighten the Baby Gap beret that I had to get for her, even though it had only been marked down a single time. I have a slight online shopping addiction, where my only niece is concerned, and I'm not even sorry. It's what happens when you don't have any rugrats of your own to spend money on. Plus, I'm her only auntie, so it's required that I spoil her. Tonight is the first time she'll visit Santa when she's old enough to understand who the big man is, and I have to be here to see whether she'll scream with joy or terror when she sat on his knee. I'm voting for cool indifference, personally. She's a little on the different side, like her auntie. I never did care about things like that when I was growing up. I've always been more about the science side of things than anything too mired in fantasy. I spent more time pondering the meaning of life, trying to find it in theorems and values, than in debating what I wanted from the fat man in the red suit. I thought it made me seem older and cool to be all existential and meta about things. "Why do we have to learn algebra anyway?" one of my friends once asked. It was meant to be a joke, a universal complaint uttered by just about every kid forced to take the class. I considered the question very seriously, though, and then answered, "Because 42. My friend didn't get it, of course. No one ever did, except a few other nerds who had some familiarity with arcane literature, and I wasn't going to explain The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy to those who didn't. So, the closest I ever got to a corporate understanding of the meaning of life, one that was accessible to my peers, was that life was a rank bitch, and then you died. It's proven to me just how true that is when I glance up from adjusting the pretty but impractical beret that refuses to stay on Ava's head and find my husband waiting 10th in line to see Santa. That he's in the line is in and of itself curious, but stranger still, he is supposed to be some 800 miles away in Chicago. What's even odder is that there's an unfamiliar child who looks to be around Ava's age, attached octopus style to his pants leg. My fingers go still on the hat, and I tilt my head, considering. I will stay calm and manage my stress. I will use the scientific method to figure this out. I will not lose my shit.
Ami Harry?
Ava pats my face with both little hands, and I shush her absently. Just a minute, baby girl. I nudge my brother gently with my elbow, interrupting his conversation with the woman behind us in line. Owen, do you see that? Observe. One husband out of place, out of time. Ask a question. What possible explanation could said husband have for being here when he's supposed to be at a sales meeting? Form a hypothesis. He's back in town unexpectedly and accompanying a friend's family. Maybe? That doesn't quite seem to fit, though. Owen swivels toward me.
Hmm? See what?
He turns back almost immediately, though, the woman he's speaking to reclaiming his attention with a smile and a touch on his sleeve. Words form in my brain, but don't leave my lips. He can be such a gigolo when he wants to be my brother. There's a blonde woman standing beside my husband, busty, with what I'm positive are implants, and pretty, if a bit Regina George-ish, in her dress and manner. She's fussing over a baby in a stroller, and as I watch, she bends and picks the baby up. I blink, willing the vision to dissipate. Tuck, tuck, tuck on my sleeve.
Hemi?
He's in Chicago, I mutter, grasping one of Ava's hands as I wait for Owen to tell me I'm wrong. I have to be wrong. It's just someone who looks like him. Everyone has a doppelganger, right?
Maki,
Ava says, pointing. Experiment to test the hypothesis.
Damn,
my brother adds, finally extricating himself from his conversation and looking to where my focus is directed.
Is that?
Fuck, I growl. The woman ahead of me shoots me a dirty look, which I return.
Double fuck,
I add, just for good measure. I don't need your judgment, lady.
Is that her husband up ahead in line for Santa with a Regina George lookalike and a strange kid? No, so she can shut all the way up as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, holy night, there's another kid. How many is that already? My stomach sinks to the tiled floor of the mall,
and the gaily strung Christmas lights around Santa's workshop swing and blur. The scent of peppermint blends with pretzels from a vendor, and I feel sick. What the hell is happening? Boosting Ava onto my hip, I step out of line and close my eyes, conscious of the jostle and glide of bodies flowing around me like a school of fish parting around a stationary reef risen in their midst. With my eyes closed, I feel the night. A Salvation Army bell jingle-jangling, discordant over the piped-in, "Do you hear what I hear, Carol?" Ava's soft hand tangled in the hair at the nape of my neck, the scent of her Johnson's & Johnson's, underlaid with the Cheerios she'd eaten earlier in the car. The essence of holiday cedar and excited children, glowing lights and tolerant parents, it pulses in my veins with a reminder of our purpose here this evening. I'm here, in this too loud and too busy plaza, to make memories for Ava, to snap a photo of her looking confused and irritable on Jolly St. Nick's lap so our entire family can look back and laugh over it every Christmas in the future. Something Marcus and I can dream about for our own children. We've been trying for 7 long years, but it's not an impossible dream. I am not here to discover anything horrible about my husband. Analyze the data. I'm not here for Jerry Springer-esque surprises, for the brand of drama that upsets carefully planned futures and happy homes. Except your home isn't that happy, a little voice whispers in my head. I ignore it. Thoughts like that are depressing. I didn't see what I thought I just did. No, when I open my eyes, it'll be someone else entirely. Someone else's husband, someone else's daddy, someone else. I thought Marcus was in Chicago. And who the hell is Fertile Myrtle? Owen's question has an unwilling half-laugh springing from me.
Oh, fuck.
Harriet? My eyes spring open, and there he is. He's a handsome man, my Marcus. Dark hair that sweeps in a perfect wave back from the classic curve of his forehead, the ever-inquiring arch of his eyebrows and hazel eyes. They're looking at me now, wide and confused and panicky.
Were you supposed to be here tonight?
He's wondering.
Or did I misread the schedule?
That's my Marcus, so caught up in schedules and routines. Is he, though? Mine, I mean. The blonde woman standing just behind him and to his right doesn't seem to think so, judging from the possessive hold she has on his arm. The arm that's not being used to hold an infant, wrapped in a creamy knit blanket with candy canes dancing across its swaddled expanse. Sleepy eyes blink out at me, and a pang knots my womb. They're the same hazel as Marcus's.
Hi, Marky,
Ava says, leaning forward. It's odd, given he's never paid much attention to her, but she adores her uncle. My spaghetti arms make no effort to stop her, and Marcus is forced to catch her, wrangling the arm attached to the blonde free, just in time to swoop Ava to his chest in an awkward hold.
Hey there, kiddo, my favorite girl.
I thought I was your favorite, Daddy.
A small voice pipes, and as one, our gazes lower to the little girl who hovers with elfin curiosity behind the blonde. Draw conclusions. The look-alike similarities in appearance, the proximity. Daddy. Her mother. Her father. I might puke. 42, babe. Life's a bitch, and then you die. The woman looks sharply at Marcus now and reaches for the baby.
Yes, Daddy,
she says, placing cutting emphasis on the word.
I was under the same impression, along with Trevor and Jolie and Barrett.
It's then I notice 2 other children, both boys, standing to the side. They're roughly 10 and 8, give or take a few years, and the dark cowlicks waving back from their foreheads make my throat tighten. Their arms are crossed in identical defensive postures across their chests, and as my eyes fall upon them, they shift, looking from one adult to the next. Owen steps forward.
What the hell, man?
I touch his arm, a silent plea to let me handle this. He's always been my protector, but I have to take care of some things on my own. Marcus, I don't... You said you were in Chicago this weekend. Who are these people? Who is... She? The words fall from my lips into a vacuum, and numbly, I realize a crowd is gathering. A chill chases the numbness, making me want to shiver. I'm frozen in this moment, this dreadful blink of discovery. These kids, they're close to a decade old, much older than my own marriage. The thought stabs, something about it creating a nagging urgency to stop and process. But Ava whines, and my eyes skitter around to find people pulling their phones out, prepared for a brouhaha as readily as they were for a visit with Santa.
Harriet,
Marcus starts.
I'm his wife.
The blonde interrupts whatever he was about to say, shooting him a look I can't interpret.
Who the hell are you?
I'm a block of ice. Nice to meet you. Owen takes his daughter from Marcus.
Well, this is awkward.
He looks at the blonde.
My name's Owen, this is my sister, and she's also his wife, which makes him a douchebag of the highest power.
The voices in the crowd are starting to settle in my consciousness, and I look around to see phones and avid expressions. Damn it, that's all I need, to become the latest TikTok sensation. I'll be the campus laughingstock. Anxiety rising, I struggle to find my voice. Sugar whines again and paws at my hand, and my grip tightens on her leash. Maybe we should talk about this at home, Marcus. The blonde could care less about becoming a public spectacle.
Oh, hell no!
Handing the baby in her arms to one of the older boys, she's between us before Marcus can reply.
If you think for one second my husband will be going home to discuss anything with you... You have another thing coming.
Her blue eyes hard on me. She reaches up and removes an earring. Still frozen, I'm in Arctic tundra, unable to move or shift from the reality staring me in the face. I'm dreaming. And any minute now, I'm going to wake up. That's the only possible explanation for this insane turn of events that has my husband committing bigamy with this mean girl to end all mean girls, who apparently wants to fight me for him.
Gina!
Marcus's voice is a whine in the background, accompanied by a growing hum of excitement from the group of spectators. And her name is Gina. Guess I wasn't too far off the mark with my earlier assessment. My life is complete. Gina? Is that short for Regina? I should probably be questioning her use of the word husband rather than her name, but I can't think about that right now. I snort a laugh and lift the back of my hand to my nose. I can't help it. It's not amusement. It's a mix of nerves and confusion and fear and every other raw feeling I've felt for the past 10 minutes, begging for recognition and resolution. It infuriates Gina, though, and she launches herself at me, her hands landing solidly in my hair. Her nails sink into my scalp, scraping against the skin and tearing, and a screech rises in my throat.
What's so fucking funny, bitch?
Yank.
Not so funny now, huh?
Pull. There's a metallic taste in my mouth, and I toss a desperate look at my brother. He interprets it immediately.
Oh my God, let her go!
A hand grabs at us. Dimly, I register it as Owen's, but it's ineffectual with Ava in his arms.
Marcus, a little help with your crazy bitch here?
This isn't happening. I've never fought with another person in my life. I'm a college professor, for God's sake, a food chemist. I wear glasses and a white coat, work in a lab with petri dishes and spectrometers and computers. I've never taken my earrings off in preparation for a girl fight in my life. I don't throw down. I don't rumble. I'm not Rhonda fucking Rousey, and we're in a mall, feet away from Santa's workshop, with children standing open-mouthed all around us. This woman is certifiable. But for the sake of my wounded pride and my stinging scalp, I gather all the aggression I can muster and wrap both hands around Gina's throat. She's significantly taller than I am, and to get more leverage, I monkey climb her torso, latching my legs around her hips until we both fall to the ground in a tangle of thrashing limbs and grunted curses. "Nothing funny," I mutter. "You should watch your fucking language." "I'll fucking watch you eat tile, fucking cunt!" She releases one hand from my hair to claw at one of the hands around her throat. "Let go!" My ears roar with the rush of blood and the din of bystanders shouting. My brother's voice rises above it all, and when I break my focus to look for him, I find him pressing Ava's face against his chest while he yells something at Marcus. "I'll let go when you let go of my hair. I'll rip your fucking hair out. I'll tear those fake boobs off." I shouldn't go there. I could care less if a woman elects to surgically enhance her assets, but if Blondie tears one strand of my hair from my head, I will separate a nip. I swear I will. "They're not fake." Just then I feel a pair of arms slide around my waist and pull me clear of Gina with an authority I can't shimmy free of. I try, though, kicking and sliding desperately, until my foe hefts me upward with a grunt, banding one arm with painful pressure beneath my breasts and wrapping the other securely across my windmilling hips.
"Do I need to taser you, ma'am?"
a low voice asks, close to my ear, and I sag, my gaze searching for my attacker. She's receiving similar treatment from a guy whose carriage and general look scream cop, even though he's not wearing a uniform. An abandoned paper bag of Chicken King is scattered at his feet, along with a distinctive black jewelry store bag. Gina's thrashing foot kicks it across the tiled floor, her scarlet mouth drawing wide in a snarl, and I close my eyes in disbelief. This isn't happening. As if discovering my husband apparently has a second life and another wife wasn't bad enough, now I get to find out what it's like to be arrested. I've officially descended to convict status.
"Holy shit."
The man's voice comes again, and he holds me out a fraction, twisting me away from him. There's something familiar this time about his voice, and I squirm to get a better look at him. My jaw sags. No freaking way. "Holy shit," I echo. "Jack?"
"Harry?"
At that moment, my vision dims and blurs, and everything around me begins to spin. I squeeze my eyes closed, fighting against what I know is coming. "Not now. God, please, not now." It's no use. I can feel everything stiffening, and know this one is going to be bad. Commotion breaks out a few feet away, and a flurry of movement registers in the corner of my eye. With one arm, Jack tussles briefly with someone as he attempts to keep us separated, until from nowhere, a fist heavy with rings flies into my cheekbone. A flare of pain erupts, but I have no time to process it, as an instant later, my body goes rigid against Jack and starts to twitch. My conscience yields one final thought as Jack curses and begins to lower me to the floor. Fuck! 2. Harriet. 9th grade. The tug on my braid comes as it always does, approximately 33 seconds after I take my seat in the third row behind the bus driver. It doesn't matter that I'm basically right under his nose, where discipline and Johnny Lee Jameson are concerned. The man is deaf, dumb and blind. Most adults are, I've discovered.
Hey, Harriet Mabee, you dork. What color are your panties today, dork?
I sigh and look down at the book I just pulled from my backpack in preparation for the lengthy bus ride. It's a drive to virtually anywhere in Lucy Falls, Virginia, and I try to come prepared. I hate being bored more than anything, and riding around the winding roads of my little country town is not my idea of excitement. But anyway, here we go. I could try to read my copy of Brave New World in an attempt to ignore him, but I'd tried that before. Johnny Lee doesn't like being ignored. The one time I'd attempted it, on the advice of my mama, he'd snatched the once and future king from my hands and torn the paperback spine clean in half. I'd cried like a baby in front of the entire bus. As if an echo to my thoughts, Johnny Lee's voice slithers into my ear, a sibilant whisper.
Dork, you aren't ignoring me, are you?
With careful deliberation, I close the book on my tasseled bookmark and tuck it away into my backpack before twisting to face him. His fingers are still on my braid, causing another painful pull of several strands. Gently, I tug it from his grasp.
What do you want, Johnny Lee? Well, I asked you a question, didn't I?
Hard blue eyes glitter down at me from where he leans over the seat behind mine.
Inquiring minds want to know. What color are they?
I swallow and look around. The county bus is packed full of kids of all ages, ninth graders like us, on down to the itty-bitties, whom us girls try to watch out for in their mama's absence. There's even the occasional senior, like Jack Brady, two seats over, who rides the bus instead of driving. The little kids chatter amongst themselves, oblivious. Most of the older ones either stare openly or pretend not to watch while hanging on every word exchanged. I'm not sure which I hate more. Cheeks heating, I glare at Johnny Lee.
Why do you have to be such an asshole?
Asshole. The word is foreign on my tongue, and Mama would die if she knew I'd said it. All the more reason to use it.
Oh, you know, 'cause I secretly like you or some bullshit.
He pauses, looks around to gauge his audience.
You don't want to tell me? I'll just find out for... That's enough.
There's that moment in a movie when the hero steps in to save the day and makes some grand statement. All heads swivel to look at him, mingled admiration and anticipation coupled with fear for his safety in their gazes.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker! Hey, you guys! I'm Batman.
That's what happens now, when Jack Brady's quiet voice pierces Johnny Lee's braying noise and silences the bus. I look at him in wonder. Until now, I would have said he didn't know I existed. Hell, maybe he doesn't. Maybe his jaw would be doing that sexy clenching thing if Johnny Lee were messing with any girl. Maybe he just feels a sense of injustice. Maybe...
What did you say to me?
Johnny Lee's hand releases my hair, and he half rises in his seat.
I wasn't speaking Portuguese.
Jack's eyes flick to me.
You all right?
I nod, not trusting myself to speak.
Oh, Portuguese!
Johnny Lee says it like Portuguese, and part of me wants to snicker, but that would just bring his attention back to me, and I don't want that.
Aren't we fancy this fine morning? Why don't you just Portuguese yourself on out of this conversation, eh? This doesn't concern you.
Yeah, I don't think I will. Leave her alone, Jameson. Hell, leave all these kids alone. Stop being a little punk.
I watch in awe as a dull flush of red creeps up Johnny Lee's neck and cheeks. His fists open and close, and he stands to his full height.
Sit down, please, young man.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?